Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Outdated Wrestling Hour. I'm really looking forward to this one because I think one of the topics for discussion on this particular podcast is the TNA Knockouts. Shall I say hubba hubba? Should I say 23 skidoo? All I know is I'll be listening with bated breath. Actually, just bad breath. I've been having trouble with the dentures. It's the Outdated Wrestling Hour. Where's my Polident?
Once again, welcome back to the Outdated Wrestling Hour. My name is Bob Smith. I used to be with Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine in the 1980s and 1990s. Pick up an old issue, you'll see my name in there somewhere. I think I was associate or assistant editor first, worked my way up to managing editor before I left the company around 94, 95. Anyway, hi. We got a good one for you. This one's really different. We have a young man as our guest, Michael Cappuccini, but he's got something we're going to look back a few years at, and it's TNA, and he's writing a book. We're going to take a look at something older. Can you believe it's more than 20 years old now? As I talk about often on the show, it's hard to believe for somebody my age that it's 2025, and that means it's 25 years since the year 2000. That's a spell. And TNA, founded by the Jarretts, started in 2002, and we're going to take a look back way back at TNA, and we're going to talk about the emergence of women's wrestling, the Knockouts specifically in TNA. Michael Cappuccini knows a lot about this. He is in the process of putting together a book. It won't be available for a while, but once it is, like I said, it's going to be a big deal. So I'm glad to have him on the show as the first person he's talking to about this particular project. You know, he's from Philadelphia, which I consider to be the wrestling capital of the United States right now as we speak. I just want to reiterate something that's been going on. We're going to make a slight change to the show, but I think a really good change to the show. In negotiations right now, we'll see how it goes. It's going to add to the enjoyment of this program. I just know it because it's one of your favorite guests, hopefully coming on this show on a weekly basis. So we'll see how this works out. But in the meantime, yeah, that'll wet your whistle for a while, right? So anyway, we're going to have a lot of fun here with Michael Cappuccini, a really bright guy. I mean, he's getting his doctorate and everything. He's just a really, really smart fellow. And I think you'll enjoy hearing his words. So get your usual libation, beer, soda, milk of amnesia, whatever you prefer. And come on back. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. But first, our usual word about the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. It's a lot of shows you're going to want to check out. Now, check this out. Well, I reckon it's time to do a little bit of an update for the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Let's see what shows you can enjoy several times every week. They've got a veritable cornucopia of wrestling podcasts, so let's dig into it. Pretty much the flagship of WrestleCopia is the Wrestling Memory Grenade. Join host Ray Russell as he analyzes and discusses years of wrestling history from your favorite promotions, from Hulkamania to Mulkamania, from the Midnight Express to the Lex Express. They've got it all. Tune in and get a big piece of history on the Wrestling Memory Grenade. If you like nostalgia, this one's for you. The Wrestling Stoop with Bob Roop. What a legend Bob Roop is, and he welcomes you to the Wrestling Stoop as he shares stories, historical moments, and all kinds of memories from his 20-plus year career as a wrestler and booker. And you know he got wild near the end of his career. Find out all of it on the Wrestling Stoop with Bob Roop. One of the most unique wrestling podcasts anywhere is DG's Puro Wrestling Academy. Join host Dan as he travels back in time to discuss the history of pro wrestling in Japan. He's spent decades studying the world of Japanese pro wrestling,
Now he offers up his historian-level knowledge to you. You'll learn something on every single show, I guarantee it. That's DG's Puro Wrestling Academy. The great Gene Jackson hosts the Retro Wrestling Review. That's RE-View. Brings in a variety of co-hosts and wrestling legends to the program as he goes back in time to watch and review pro wrestling from years ago by. Get the breakdown here at never-before-heard stories. And feel free to watch along with them. It's worth it, let me tell you, especially if you're a USWA fan. Enjoy the Retro Wrestling Review. When this show started not all that long ago, it was called Dangerous Conversations with Doug Gilbert. Now, it's Dangerous Conversations with Doug Gilbert and Tommy Rich, two of the great stars from Memphis and beyond. You'll learn all about them, hear great old school stories, stuff you've never heard before, definitely on Dangerous Conversations with Doug Gilbert and Tommy Rich. One of my personal favorite podcasts out there is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty, a meat and potatoes name for anything but a meat and potatoes show. Join him as he reminisces about pro wrestling history with a variety of legendary guests and topics. And what I like about him, he knows everything about Dick the Bruiser, Bruiser Bedlam, and the WWA. But that's only part of what you'll hear on Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. It was the WWF versus WCW, Raw versus Nitro, the Monday Night War, the Ratings War, the NWO, the Attitude Era. Now, there's a podcast all about it. It's called Monday Warfare, Raw versus Nitro. They break it down with episode reviews, you name it. If you want to know all about that classic ratings war, listen to Monday Warfare, Raw versus Nitro. One of the most unique podcasts you'll hear anywhere is the Other Ship podcast. It's a pop culture contest with a pro wrestling lean. Join a rotating group of co-hosts as they talk movies, sports, music, TV, food, and of course, pro wrestling. They take on various topics in roundtable discussions, special guest interviews, and other content concepts. As they say, laugh your ass off on this voyage aboard the Other Ship. New episodes are in the bag for the Captain's Corner pod. Join Captain Nick as he presents the Captain's Corner podcast. It features old school wrestling interviews and discussions, plus all the latest goings on in the world of the Captain's Adventures. Nothing else quite like the Captain's Corner pod. Also on the WrestleCopia Network, the Glory Days GrappleCon cast. Hosts Barry and Captain Nick present the Glory Days GrappleCon podcast featuring memories and special interviews with wrestling stars of the past and even those of today. There's even more at WrestleCopia, a podcast called TR Shocks the World, the WCNN News, and the Power Hour. It's quite a lineup with more new podcasts joining all the time. It's the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. How do you get involved? It's pretty easy. Go to their constantly updated website, WrestleCopia.com. Click a few buttons and take a voyage into wrestling's past, present, and future. Get it all at WrestleCopia. I guess it was about 18 to 20 months ago I met our guest here tonight, and we talked for a good long time. He had more hair then. He's gotten a haircut since then. But I will say, I was immediately struck by this gentleman's knowledge of professional wrestling and the fact that he's like really smart. So I want you to welcome from the Philadelphia area, it's Michael Cavaccini. Hi, Michael. Good to see you again, man.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me on. And it's funny you mentioned my haircut because I actually just got my haircut today. So, you know, very observant.
Yeah, listen, we follow each other on Facebook, so it's easy to do, you know. But anyway, it's good to have you here. And you've got a really interesting project coming up. And I think this is one that my particular group of fans, we tend to be a little older on the show. We're all outdated, as they say. I think they're going to be really into it because you're kind of taking a tack that I think a lot of people may not take. So go ahead. The forum is yours. Tell me what you're up to right now.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. And hi, everyone who's listening. So yeah, Michael Cavaccini. I'm from Philadelphia. And back in, I think it was late 2020, I could be wrong, but right after Bob Ryder, one of the co-founders of TNA Wrestling, passed away, I remember looking online to see if there was a book about TNA that I could read, and I saw that it didn't exist. So I thought to myself, having interviewed, you know, hundreds of musicians over the years, from Kiss to Dionne Warwick to Barry Manilow, to also best-selling authors Lee Child, Harlan Coben, Lisa Scottolini, I figured, you know, I have this skill of interviewing people, and I've interviewed some wrestlers. What the heck? Why don't I just write this book? So I decided to just start reaching out to anyone and everyone connected to TNA. My original idea was to write about the first 20 years of TNA. And actually, the first person I had the opportunity to talk to on the phone was Jeff Jarrett. And that was just a wonderful, gratifying moment, because of all the people who I reached out to, for the first one to speak with to be the founder of the company was just wonderful, because I got to basically run my idea by him and see, like, does he even think this is, you know, a viable idea? And this was before his podcast. And he liked it. He thought it was good. He thought it made sense. And we stayed in touch. From there, I started to interview a bunch of people, Matt Morgan. And by the end of it, over 300 people, including, you know, Diamond Dallas Page, Gail Kim, David Zahadi, Kevin Kay, the former president of Spike TV. I mean, you name it, TV executives, people who built the ring, people who did the pyro, the seamstress who created the outfits. I mean, everyone, from even the guys who created the video game at Midway, the TNA wrestling video game. So I really was looking at it from like every angle. And then what happened was, about a year ago, September 2023, I was kind of at a crossroads and thinking about, do I pursue, because I have a bachelor's and a master's degree in communication. And I was like debating, like, how do I get more teaching opportunities? And I thought, maybe I get a PhD. And I spoke with a professor who taught me at Temple University, and he convinced me. He said, going for the PhD is a good idea because it's funded. I'm like, what does that even mean? He's like, we waive your tuition. I was like, hold on a minute. I don't have to pay tuition? He's like, no, we waive it. And I said, okay. And he's like, even better, we pay you to be a teaching assistant. I said, so hold on a minute. I go to school for free and you pay me to be here. And at the end, I leave with a master's degree and a PhD in sociology. Do I have that right? And he said, yes. Holy crap, that's amazing. I was like, why wouldn't I do that? Now, of course, the competition's stiff. Like, I was only one of three people who got accepted into Temple's sociology PhD program. So I was so grateful and happy that I got in. But it's just this amazing opportunity. And I was telling this teacher, Dustin, about my TNA book. And he's like, you know, Michael, your book could be your dissertation. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, there's a way to make it your dissertation, because my focus is gender and sexuality. And I was telling him about the Knockouts. And I actually had a conversation with the editor of PWI, Kevin. And he kind of gave me the idea to refocus this book on just the Knockouts. He said, you can still talk about everything you wanted to talk about in the book to begin with, but why not have the theme of this book be the Knockouts? And I thought, wow, what a great idea. Because to me, if you look at there's three ways TNA influenced professional wrestling: the Knockouts, the X Division, and tag team wrestling. Those were the three greatest things the company's ever done. And really, the Knockouts are the greatest of all of them, because, I mean, look at where we are today as we're recording this. TNA just announced a multi-year deal with WWE, and a lot of it started with Jordynne Grace, right? And her doing stuff with WWE. Years ago, Mickie James being in the Royal Rumble. So, I mean, really, without the Knockouts, they probably wouldn't have the opportunity they have right now with WWE. So Gail Kim really changed the face of women's wrestling, and through this whole process, I've come really close with her, really close with Christy Hemme, who's best friends with Gail. And I've decided to really focus this effort, my dissertation and my book, on the Knockouts. And just to kind of give you guys an idea for what the heck does that really mean. Basically, what it means is that I'll do a dissertation that will be about, you know, basically it's a case study of TNA wrestling, looking at how it basically revolutionized women's wrestling. Now, of course, I need to make that sociological and apply theory and all that other stuff. So when I graduate, basically, my goal is that when I graduate, which will be 5 years from now, I want to publish my book pretty much immediately. I mean, that's the goal. Like, you know, once I'm Dr. Michael Cavaccini, let's get that book out there. Now, the book is not going to have sociological theory and all of this stuff, so don't get scared. It's going to basically be for the masses. It's going to be published by me. It's not going to be in some expensive academic press. There'll be an ebook, a physical book. There'll be an audiobook. An audiobook's going to be narrated by someone amazing, so get ready for that. And it's just going to be this amazing book, but it will be I'll be the first sociologist, the first doctor to write a book about professional wrestling for the masses. Because a lot of times these doctors, these academics will write books for, you know, academia. And I think that's a waste. I think I'd much rather write this for you and make it accessible, make it affordable, and make it as interesting as can be, because this is such an important story to tell. And with each passing year as I work on this, it's just becoming more apparent just how influential and important Gail Kim and the Knockouts really are.
Well, I have to totally agree with your choice of Gail Kim. In fact, I did a show recently here, a little bit lighter in tone, and I picked my pick for the 10 most underrated wrestlers, and she was on it. Because I don't think she gets overall the amount of massive respect that she deserves for taking it seriously as an athletic. I don't know how to put it. Now, we know when they formed the Knockouts, the word itself led to pinup pictures, right? I mean, and in those early days, TNA did have some very juicy pinups of all of their female competitors. However, when the bell rang and Gail Kim was in the ring, she was all business. I mean, she had worked, I think, internationally by that point. She was serious in the ring, and it showed. And then some of the other competitors got every bit as serious as she was. And you're right. It was a new era, and it just kind of happened organically. Am I wrong in my summation of this?
No, and I think part of what's interesting and part of what I'll get into in my dissertation and in the book in a non-academic way, of course, is how did this happen? Because for my dissertation, what I'm going to look at is how did women's wrestling go from being illegitimate to legitimate within a certain period of time? Like, what caused that to happen? Part of it's going to be Gail convincing Jeff Jarrett, Dutch Mantel, and TNA to take the women's wrestling seriously. Instead of just having women as managers or having these one-off matches, let's create a division, right? Actually, let's put some structure around this. For her, she had to convince Jeff and get buy-in from the leadership that, hey, this is worth investing in. The thing about Gail is like this: the fight never ends. You know, over the years, you know, she's had to fight for better pay. She's had to fight for other women to get recognition and development and things like that. It's not like you just break through the glass ceiling and you're done. It continues. And even as an executive behind the scenes, you know, she's had struggles when it comes to having power, influence, and fair pay. And I think that that's important for people to understand is, you know, all the things that she's gone through. And because sometimes people just assume, oh, you're on TV, you're a wrestler, you're making a ton of money. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, I've interviewed lots of wrestlers and people and asked them about pay. You know, I'm very curious about that. So I've gotten information from folks about what they were paid. You know, it's surprising. I mean, for some of these people who achieved great success, they, you know, were, that's why they do a lot of indie dates, right? Because what they're getting from the company isn't necessarily a ton of money unless you're working for WWE. It's a different story. Yeah, it's just an interesting to see the highs and the lows that both the company, TNA, has gone through. And of course, the journey that Gail and these other women have gone through. And it's not just about Gail for me. It's about, I've interviewed Velvet Sky, Angelina Love, Taryn Terrell, Chelsea Green. I did interview Jordan Grace, Diana Perazzo, just a ton of people. And I mentioned Christy Hemme. Christy hasn't done any interviews with anyone in years. So she really trusts me. And, you know, we're having multiple interviews about all sorts of topics related to this. You know, to me, it's almost an important story I just want to share with the world. And oh, one of the people I forgot to mention that I interviewed, I've interviewed a few people who have passed away, including Don West, Daphne being another one. And for Daphne, when I interviewed her, she was crying on the phone because she was just overwhelmed by the idea that I was going to share her story with the world and all the struggles that she went through and what she fought for, just everything. And then after she unfortunately took her life, I interviewed her attorney who represented her in her workers' comp claim against TNA. So he basically corroborated everything she told me and shared additional information with me. So her story alone is just moving, tragic, but also beautiful because she's such an important person in this story. And that's the thing. It's not just like sunshine and rainbows, right? I mean, this story is a warts and all story about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Dixie Carter's a big part of that, right? I've had phone calls with Dixie, a lot of her. And that's what I mean about this story. It's going to be about a lot of the mistakes Dixie made, but, you know, also how without Dixie, we wouldn't be here either. So everybody's kind of a hero and a villain Yes. Except for Gail. I think she's always the hero. I don't think she's ever the villain. It's just a fascinating story. I think it's the most interesting wrestling company ever. I mean, I know that people give a lot of attention to WCW and WWE, but I got to tell you, knowing the history of TNA, it's probably the most interesting company to ever exist when it comes to professional wrestling.
Well, it's had so many phases. I was around when they first formed, right? And I was buying those pay-per-views. People forget that when they debuted, the only way you could see them was, what was it, monthly pay-per-views, bi-weekly? I don't even remember. But I was buying those pay-per-views, and it was the Jarretts were behind it, and I was the biggest Memphis wrestling fan you've ever met. And I'm going, I can't wait for this. This is going to be awesome. And the first show was on, and they had all the old NWA champions either at ringside or in the ring. And I'm like, heaven, Nirvana, this is my jam. And then they started the show. And it was kind of disjointed, and week two was even worse. And they had bad attempts at comedy to go along. I'm going, this doesn't feel right. What's wrong here? You know, I kind of got disillusioned real quick. I kept buying it for the most part for the better part of at least a year, maybe into this, to the time when they did finally get a network TV contract. But there were so many different phases, so many changes. And I find it remarkable. They had on their roster at one time or another almost every major WCW or WWE star on their roster. And yet nobody ever refers to TNA. I don't get it. I know they broke through, and they were easily number two for a long time. But what I'm trying to figure out is I don't know anybody that discusses them. Seriously now. It fascinates me that I think they made too many changes along the way to keep customer loyalty. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting you mentioned all that. So I interviewed so many people from the history of the company. So like in the early days, you're talking about when they were struggling to find their identity. I totally agree with that. I interviewed Richard Scrucci, who's the former CEO of HealthSouth, which was their original financial backer that eventually stopped backing them, which led to Dixie Carter having to come in and basically buy a part of the company. So I interviewed Richard multiple times. Good guy, interesting stories there. And I also interviewed Jason Hervey, you know, from the Wonder Years, Eric Bischoff's former partner. I interviewed him because he used to work at HealthSouth, which is an interesting connection there. So I interviewed him about his experiences with Eric Bischoff and also working at HealthSouth and those early days. So those stories are interesting. And I even interviewed a guy off the record who had never spoken with anyone because he basically brought a lawsuit against TNA because he was accused of basically having the company. There was this whole drama in the early days after the first few pay-per-views. They were getting numbers from InDemand, the pay-per-view company, saying we sold X amount of pay-per-views. So based on what they thought they sold, they were spending money they essentially didn't have. And then that caused them to essentially get into a financial bind. So they brought a lawsuit against that guy. And I got to interview that guy about the lawsuit, the whole thing, all that drama off the record, because he just basically didn't want to get sued by Jeff Jarrett if he said anything negative. But that was a fascinating interview. So there was all that. And then I, along the way, interviewed the head of Fox Sportsnet that was their first TV deal. So I know all the details about how that TV deal came together. And then I, of course, interviewed like all the key players at Spike TV. So Spike TV is when they first started getting paid TV rights. And then when they got canceled from Spike TV, then they went over to, you know, other networks like Pop TV. And I interviewed that executive. And that was a whole different ballgame. Because to me, it's interesting to interview all these people to kind of see, you know, the value of the company changed over time. At Spike, it was pretty high. And but, you know, before and after, not so much. And I think they really found their identity around 2007, 2008, 2009, pretty much right before Hogan came in. Because at that point, they had a great identity. They had the six-sided ring, the knockouts, the X division, the tag teams. Like TNA was across the line, right? It was awesome. And then they kind of sold out. Hogan and Bischoff came in and made a bunch of bad choices, or convinced Dixie to make a bunch of bad choices. And then it was the revolving door of leadership. You had Bruce Pritchard, you had John Gaborik, you had all of these people kind of coming and going and coming and going. And obviously Vince McMahon, is because he kind of had the same people surrounding him forever, there was some sort of consistency. And also he also had the final word, right? He wouldn't let someone whisper in his ear and convince him to do something it didn't make sense. But Dixie, for all the good that she meant to do, was easily manipulated. And I think that a lot of the people who were manipulating her didn't necessarily care about the future of the company. They just cared about collecting a paycheck. And I think that's where a lot of things went wrong. Yeah, there was just so many dramatic moments in the company's history to chronicle. And I think all of them are still relevant, even for my book, because even though they may not directly be related to the knockouts, if they're related to Dixie, then they're in the book, right? So I'm including all that good stuff because I think it matters. So this isn't just a book for people who care about women's wrestling. It's a book for people who just care about wrestling or just care about a really, really interesting story about a company that doesn't, like you said, get the attention it deserves. It's going to be really, really good. Because when I want Jeff Jarrett to read it, I want Gail Kim to read it, I want Scott D'Amore, who I interviewed, to read it, and all of them to say, wow, this is excellent. And I want them to feel that even if they don't agree with everything in the book, that they feel that the quality is there. And I got to tell you this, I reached out to Jeff Jarrett to tell him what I was doing. Because I said, hey, Jeff, I got accepted into this PhD program. Here's what I'm doing. I wasn't sure how he was going to react because I thought he might be like, Jesus, God, Michael, when's this book coming out? But no, his response was actually, oh my God, Michael, this is fantastic. I'm so proud of you. This is wonderful. So he actually, Jeff Jarrett, is super excited about the direction this book is taking and that I'm pursuing my PhD in sociology. And so to me, that made me feel really good because, like, again, if I can kind of have that seal of approval from the founder of the company, as well as Gail Kim, then I must be doing something right. So there's certain people I want to make proud while also living up to my own standards, because I think that we've all read books where we're just like, yeah, you know, this is just they're just trying to sensationalize stuff and it's just trying to be like clickbait. And that's not what this is about, right? It's just giving voice to the people who lived this experience and also giving credit where credit's due.
Well, I'll tell you what, I stopped watching TNA for a while, and I'm flipping channels one night like we all do, especially an old wrestling guy like me, and I caught in the middle of it a Gail Kim Taryn Terrell match. Now, I'd known Taryn Terrell from WWE as Tiffany, and I'm watching this match and I'm going, first of all, I gotta be honest, they both look wonderful in their series, but I'm watching the match itself and I'm like, this is intense. This looks real. They look like they're going at it. And if you're an old school guy like me, when it looks like a fight, that's when it's good. And it looked like a fight. They both were serious. And then I watched another match. And then I started DVRing the show again, right? To keep up with it. And even bought a couple of pay-per-views in that period. Like you intimated earlier, I think that the Gail Kim era in TNA was so important, not only for her sake, but for the sake of women's wrestling. I've said it a million times on this show. The most healthy thing to happen to professional wrestling in the last 30 years is the emergence of women's wrestling as an equal to men's wrestling. There's no question in my mind. Because I think it brought more female fans out, brought more families out, brought more kids out. No matter how you look at it, it's been a vast success. No one questions it now when there's a women's main event. And I think it all started right then and there. Do you agree?
Yeah, and the thing that's really interesting is wrestling is known as this business built on stereotypes, right? These you think about back in the day, you had evil Russians and the Italian savior and Bruno Sammartino and all this stuff. So wrestling definitely plays on ethnic stereotypes over the years. So in a way, it kind of seems to some people like, oh, this kind of lower form of entertainment. But if you look at it, look at our country right now and our world and where women's rights are. Not so good. But if you look at wrestling, actually wrestling's providing more opportunity to women than the world in general. I mean, the fact that women have reached the level they've reached, you know, because of the influence of the knockouts and because of Give Divas a Chance and WWE deciding to take women's wrestling seriously finally. Now we're at the point where women are headlining WrestleMania. They're making millions of dollars. I mean, it's an incredible transformation.
Well, we talk about what TNA did. I am trying to figure out who in WWE was responsible for the turnaround from, you know, the days of the mud pit matches and stuff like that to what we have now. Was it Fit Finlay? Was it Stephanie McMahon? I can't grasp who really was behind that. Or if it was just a gradual, you know, they had one serious women's match and then another, and they said, hey, we don't have to do the bra and panties matches anymore. We can have serious wrestling. What do you think? I cannot pinpoint the moment
that WWE changed its attitude about women's wrestling?
Well, that's something I'm exploring, you know, through my research. But the way I see it is that in 2015, you had the Give Divas a Chance social media campaign. And that happened, you know, basically the Knockouts came into existence in 2007 at Bound for Glory when Gail Kim won the first championship. And so many years later, 2015, you had the basically Give Divas a Chance. So it took that many years for WWE fans to demand that women's wrestling also be taken seriously in WWE because they saw what was happening in TNA and they loved it. You know, the Knockouts were getting great ratings in TNA. Fans were tuning in by the millions to watch it. And I think that once this social media campaign happened, WWE said, you know, TNA seems to be getting really good ratings with this. They're making money on this. The fans are demanding it. What the heck? Maybe we should just give Divas a chance. And at that time, you know, Stephanie McMahon tried to come out as this savior and this like wonderful supporter of women's wrestling. And I remember Gail Kim replied on Twitter and said something like, well, where were you years ago? You know, when I was in WWE, you weren't supporting women's wrestling then. Like something to that effect. I think Gail recognizes that, that, you know, Stephanie wants to kind of be this, you know, woman, women supporting women type of person. But in reality, she only did it because it was profitable. It's kind of like companies now where they're like, oh, our water bottles are 80% recycled plastic. It's like, yeah, that's because you just want to save money on materials. You're not trying to save the environment, right? So I think it's wondering, you know, what are the motives? Now, I would argue that right now, Triple H and Stephanie are actually doing a great job with WWE. Obviously, Vince McMahon, again, was not a supporter of women's wrestling. So I think with the current leadership they have in place, women's wrestling is a bright future. So I think the right people are in place to make that, for it to continue to grow.
Yep. And they do have an eye for talent. There's no question about that. Their women's, I don't look at anybody on WWE either side now and say they don't deserve their spot. I think they all look great, men's and women's. It's like when they bring somebody in, I understand it, and they're using them better. There's more continuity in the storylines. I just think they're on a real hot streak right now. Do you keep up with that? Do you continue to watch?
It's funny. Even though like my doctoral research is in focused on professional wrestling, women's wrestling, and I'm obviously writing a book about this, I don't watch all the time because it's just, there's too much to keep up with. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a child. I obviously have, other things going on in my life. No, I'm not watching Raw live or watching SmackDown or even TNA all the time because it's just too much to keep up with. So I'll tune in from time to time. Obviously, I'm keeping up through social media. I'm attending live events. Every time TNA comes to Philadelphia, I go. I went to WrestleMania last year. I went to all the events when it came to Philadelphia. Had a blast. So I'm definitely keeping my finger on the pulse and attending live events and, you know, watching events on TV here and there. But I don't watch obsessively just because there's just too much to keep up with. And I did attend an AEW event. That was a fun time. And I also got to go to Monster Factory, where I interviewed a bunch of folks there. Monster Factory is a great professional wrestling school in Paulsboro, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I got to interview, you know, a bunch of folks there, including some of their female wrestlers, and just had a great time. So that's kind of like, you know, what I'm doing right now with wrestling as a fan. I think when I was a kid and I had no responsibilities, hell yeah, I would watch all the time. Right? As an adult and a parent, it's a little more challenging to do that.
There's so much content now. I mean, you couldn't possibly watch it all. You know, between TNA and WWE and AEW's three or four shows and Ring of Honor is their offshoot. And then there's, you know, NXT, just go down the list. That's a lot of hours in your life if you have any kind of life at all. You know, it's very, very hard to keep up. And I understand your quandary on that because it's like, I can't do it. It's part of me wishes I could do it, but I just don't. I don't have the time.
Yeah. And the quality of what's being put out there is great. I mean, I think, you know, we don't necessarily have, I mean, WWE did really well on Netflix. I mean, they did phenomenal with the amount of viewers they got. But traditional wrestling on network television obviously isn't getting the type of viewers it used to get back in the day. But I think it's just because of the fragmentation of media and everything being on demand. People just watch TV differently than they used to. And I think that's okay. I think that's perfectly fine. But I do think it's an exciting time to be a fan because when I was a kid, in the 90s, it was just WWE in WCW, and you had ECW on like at a really late time here in Philadelphia. And that was it, right? There wasn't a lot of choice. I feel like now, to your point, there's a ton of choice. So regardless of whatever you're into, there's a promotion for you. And indie promotions are more popular than ever, which I think is really cool. It makes it, because it's going to like an indie show in your city or your town is actually really fun because it's like a smaller crowd. You can actually be close to the ring. You don't have to pay $1 million.
Right.
I encourage people to go to Monster Factory and other places because, you know, you can actually spend just, you know, a reasonable amount of money and have a good time.
Absolutely. Yes, that's important. I tell people here, I haven't been to an event in a while. And they came to Barclays Center, WWE. I said, let me do some pricing. Because I remember back in the 80s, a friend and I, when I was working up in Greene County of upstate New York, we drove to the Garden one day, took 3 hours to get there and paid about $17 for second row seats. So they had second row seats available at the Barclays Center and they were something around $1,700. I went, whoa. And then I checked the upper deck and they were going for $1.50, $1.75. I'm like, times have changed. I guess somebody's paying for all that pyro and all that staging. You know, it's like, I think it was a Friday Night SmackDown taping. That had a lot to do with it too. So I just, wow. I mean, it's as expensive as any other entertainment that you want to go see these days. And as we all know from Taylor Swift on down, nothing's cheap. That's one way that wrestling's changed. It's considered, well, on a par with, let's say, a Rolling Stones concert or something like that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, wrestling back in the day, you'd have certain people go to shows weekly. Like for TNA, when I was in Orlando at Universal Studios, you would have the same people going every week. And or in the Asylum or ECW, you'd have the same fans show up to every show because it was just like what they did. But now to do that is a lot. And when I went to WrestleMania, I spent a considerable amount of money, even though it was in my city and I didn't have to pay for a hotel or airfare. It still wasn't cheap. It required a payment plan, right?
Whoa.
There was just all these events. But it was, I mean, it was obviously worth it. But that's why when like Raw rolls through town or SmackDown, I'm just like, I'm good. I don't think that I need. But TNA is still pretty affordable. So, you know, you can still get a ticket for TNA to see their tapings and stuff at a decent price. And AEW is pretty reasonable too. But yeah, WWE, if you want a good seat, it's a lot. I think at WrestleMania, the front row seats are like $20,000 or $30,000, something like obscene. It was like buying a car.
Right, right. Well, you know, I was in Philadelphia for WrestleMania weekend for the best reason I can think of. NPR called me and wanted to interview me on a show to preview WrestleMania. I said, yeah, I'll come. But they wanted me in studio. So I actually got on the Amtrak and came to Philly and had a wonderful time at the WHYY studios there. And it was a blast. And I got to tell you, I consider Philadelphia, and I'm not blowing smoke at you, I just think Philly's the wrestling capital of the United States. And I'll tell you why. On that weekend, not only did you have the two nights of WrestleMania, but there were adjunct cards all over the region, and they all sold out. And I'm walking around the day before WrestleMania, and the street signs were up with the WWE stars on them. And I'm looking at people all over town with T-shirts on, and I'm like, man, it hasn't changed much. Because, you know, I don't even know if you know this. I was with the original ECW doing their TV with Todd Gordon. I consider Philly a pretty special wrestling town even then. There was something about the fans there. They were voracious. If there was wrestling on the marquee, they showed up. And I think they still do. So do you agree with my summation that maybe, just maybe, Philly is the wrestling capital of the United States? Because I truly believe it is. I used to think it was Memphis. Now I think it's Philly.
Philly's a special place. I mean, we're a passionate fan base. We definitely love wrestling. Yeah, that's why, like, I've been to the ECW Arena multiple times for conventions, for live shows. It's just a special place. And yeah, we're just a big part of wrestling history. And, you know, I went to Bound for Glory 2011 at Temple University, which is my first TNA event back in the day. And that was just amazing to see Hulk Hogan and Sting. And Hulk Hogan's final pay-per-view match was just wild. And there's just something, I feel like, because like when it comes to a live event, the event is only as good as the crowd. And when you perform in Philadelphia, regardless of whether you're a musician, wrestling, promotion, whatever it is you're doing, if it's live entertainment, you're going to get the energy from us because we take it seriously. And it's so much fun to go to a TNA show in Philly because the crowd comes up with the craziest chants. I mean, you're just, it's just gut-wrenchingly funny. We are just entertaining ourselves and the wrestlers in the ring with the stuff we come up with. So if you go to a wrestling show in Philly, you're going to have a great time. I mean, being there for Paul Heyman's Hall of Fame induction at WrestleMania was just amazing. His speech just had me rolling over with laughter. It was just incredible. And only in Philadelphia would that have happened.
And I got to give props to the 2300 Arena. I was there for that convention, and I was there for one other event. I'm coming back for Joel Gerhardt's event in a couple of months. I will say this. Boy, did they spiffy that place up. It's a different tone now, but the fans are the same. I know that three or four promotions have gone in and out of there, and they've all done well. So, you know, MLW, I know, was there, a few others. That may be the biggest small arena. They're the new Sportatorium, is the way I put it, because it's like you can't go wrong. People come just to experience the arena as much as the action.
Yeah, and, you know, I was telling, I think it's really cool. Is it, so you mentioned Philly. I mean, we've got, there's just so many great spots for wrestling. 2300 Arena is a fabulous spot because it's, you can get, you know, 1,000 or more people in there, depending on the seating. And it's just a great feeling just being in there with all those people. But then I mentioned Temple. Temple's hosted at the Lee Corr Center, TNA, AEW, and others. And I was talking to executives from Anthem who own TNA. And I was telling them, I was like, hey, if you're looking to play a larger venue, you guys might want to consider going back to Temple. Because Temple, it's a smaller arena than Wells Fargo, but it's bigger than obviously the 2300 Arena. So who knows? TNA might wind up returning to Temple at some point in the future because they're playing bigger spaces than they've ever have this year. Like this year, they have booked some big spots for their pay-per-views. So when they come back to Philly, I'm very interested to see, are they going to go back to the 2300 Arena? They can go to Temple? I don't know. I have a strong feeling they might go to Temple. So it'll be interesting to see, but I just love that there's so many spots for people to do wrestling in the area. And there's room for everyone here in Philly. It doesn't, you don't just have to be WWE to thrive if you're a wrestling company or a wrestler. You know, Philly loves wrestling, regardless of who's putting on the show.
Absolutely it does. I can vouch for that. You've got me salivating for how long until we actually could get that book in our hands? What do you think? Are you just saying another couple of years or?
Longer than that. So, I mean,
longer than that. Okay.
Yeah. So the PhD can be completed. If you are really good, you can get it done in 5 years. So I started in the fall. So that would be 5 years from then, right? So most people graduate in May, you know, do the math and you'll figure that out. So I'll be done this year in the spring. So it'd be an additional 4 years after the spring. So that would be the soonest it would come out. But because the reason why is because number one, I want to make sure that if my dissertation, a lot of that is going to be the book, I want to make sure I get it in a good place. And I'm still doing some interviews, very few. I mean, like I said, I'm interviewing Christy Hemme. I interviewed Scott D'Amore and others over the past few months. Of course, Gail Kim, we continue to talk regularly. But really, it's just going to be over the next few years, focusing on the additional research, the writing, pulling it all together. So that way, when I graduate, ideally, the plan would be I graduate and then I can just publish it shortly thereafter. Because I just want to get it out there. But I want to get it out there with my name as Dr. Michael Cavicini. Because I think it's important, not just for me, but I think it's important because wrestling doesn't always get the credit it deserves. And I think if more books are written by people who have a doctorate, I think it gives it an immediate level of gravitas. It gives it a certain level of credibility that it otherwise wouldn't have. And I think if a book written about women's wrestling, written by a sociologist focused on gender and sexuality, just carries a lot more weight than just some fan, right? So I think that gives it a lot more credibility. Yeah, I think it's just going to reach a whole different crowd that way. That's the plan. And like I said, it's going to be, I'm going to price it affordably. It's going to be $9.99 for ebook. You know, for physical book, obviously, it'd be a little more than that. I plan on probably doing some sort of like special edition hardback, maybe autographed by some folks. And then an audiobook, because I love audiobooks.
Are you?
And it's going to be an audiobook narrated by, you know, I'm not going to say who publicly, but it's going to be the most important person related to this story. So you figure it out. The reason why that's important is because I want to make sure the person narrating it is directly tied to the story and knows how to pronounce the name. I hate it when I listen to a wrestling audiobook and they hire some schmuck who can't pronounce the name. Then they're like, Tony Schiavone. And you're like, you mean Schiavone?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it drives me crazy. So don't worry, you're not going to get that with my book. It will sound spectacular.
Are you eschewing the idea of finding a publisher? Because I think you got your ducks in a row. You know, I mean, a major publisher. I mean, it's that much research and that much credibility into it, and you've got a battle plan. You say you're going to self-publish, or would you rather see if maybe there's a legit publisher there who might be interested in your wares? Because I can't imagine they wouldn't be.
It's a great point. And so, for example, I know ECW Press has published a lot of stuff and others. The only way I would go along with that would be if they let me retain ownership of it and that I get a significant percentage of royalties.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. If I self-publish through Amazon, I basically can keep 70% of whatever the sale price is. And then I own the rights to the book. So I don't have to worry about it going out of print. A lot of times at these traditional publishers, they'll usually just pay you a flat fee up front. And it doesn't amount to a ton of money. I'm not doing this necessarily for the money, but obviously if I can, I look at the Nitro book about WCW. That book was self-published. The number of reviews it has on Amazon is crazy. It reached a ton of people. It's kind of the standard for this type of book. It's just kind of the perfect example of what self-publishing a really high quality professional wrestling book can do for you.
But you know, you make a good point, because I know a lot of writers and I know a lot of sports people, and even the best and biggest sports books, let's say in published in the year 2022, tend to go semi out of print by 2024, 2025. They're hot at the moment of release. And then the publishing houses go, well, that was so 3 years ago. They move on to new things, you know, whoever writes the newest book. So you make a good point. Ownership of your wares is real important. It's even more important in the music business now, and I think it is in publishing too, because it's like you get to keep your stuff. That's important.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And for me, that's really important. I want to make sure that this book lives on forever. I want it to be available long after I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I really see it as kind of the greatest thing I'll do artistically, because I'm getting the PhD mainly to be in academia, to teach. I'm not looking at being some sort of researcher who does research until the end of time. To me, this is kind of my crowning achievement, you know, doing this dissertation, doing the book, getting this out there. And if anything follows it, like let's say there's some sort of additional TNA related book, maybe focused on some other aspect of the company and its history, cool. But I mean, if all I ever do is publish this book, I'm a happy guy, right? I just want to make sure that this lives up to my standards, because they always say, like with bands, that their first album is usually the best, right? Because they spent their whole life writing it. They spent their whole life preparing for it. And that's the way I look at this book, is like I've spent a lot of time on it. And I'm going to make sure to run this by lots of successful people who I trust to get their take on it before it's published. Obviously, I'll get it professionally edited. That's something sometimes people don't do when they self-publish. That's not good. You need to pay someone to edit your book to make sure it's clean.
Yes, I'm a professional editor, and I totally agree with that. No question about it. You know, don't go cheap on editing, people out there. I'm telling you, you will pay for it in the long run or the short run. Trust me.
But I mean, you know, I pinch myself when I think about all the people that I've had the opportunity to connect with over this project. And one thing I want to point out to you is that wrestling is this formerly secretive business that was, you know, if you were an outsider, you just weren't let in. And because I am an outsider, the fact that I've gained the trust of all of these people who have had the opportunity to interview, many of whom have never done an interview with anyone else, just makes me really gracious. I mean, it doesn't make me feel special. It just makes me feel lucky that these people felt enough trust in me. Like Tommy Dreamer was someone I interviewed right after he had the whole Dark Side of the Ring debacle, where he almost got canceled because of the whole Ric Flair episode. And there was all this backlash, and he was off of Busted Open for a period of time, if you remember this happening. And I asked him, Tommy, why are you talking to me of all people? Why am I your first interview? And he's like, well, I was on your website. I saw your picture with Barry Manilow. I was like, he seems like a nice guy. And I was like, cool. You know, like I gave off this feeling of I can trust this person. And even Gail Kim only trusted just me to speak with me after she talked to Brian Hebner. And Brian Hebner said, yeah, Michael's a cool guy. You can trust him. You know, you should talk to him. And of course, Jeff Jarrett and other people have vouched for me. So all these people have, you know, welcomed me into their circle. I mean, I got lunch with Gail Kim a few months back last year when TNA was in town. And I was just like, how cool is this? Like, that we're friends. Like, I mean, this is just wild. The fact that she, you know, sees me that way. And it's just, that's why I say I don't take it lightly. I mean, part of it's ability, part of it's skill, part of it's whatever. But I also think part of it's luck, right? Part of it's who's willing to work with you. And yeah, I think it's always good to have a certain level of humility in your career, your life, whatever, right? No one's just some sort of prodigy or special. It's part of it's just, you know, people working together to create something great. And that's the way I see this book and this dissertation. It's not just me. It's all these 300 plus people coming together to create something magnificent. And it's definitely going to be worth the wait. So thank you to everyone who has been waiting. I know people reach out regularly to say, how's it coming? But it's coming. And it's going to be even better than I imagined.
Hey, I'm not the youngest bulb in the box, you know. I hope I'm around by the time this book comes out. You know,
I promise, like
I tell my friends, there are younger faces on the coins in my pocket at this point. It's like I really do want to see this book. And before we do go, I want to make you made a great point before. I started with PWI in late 91, early 92, right? The difference in dealing with wrestling people from then to now is night and day. It was such a close shop in the 90s, even into the 90s. I went to Memphis once and accidentally walked in at a booking meeting, and they looked at me like a deer in the headlights because you're not supposed to be hearing this. You know, it's entirely different now. You know, the post-match press conferences they have with the wrestling press, whatever that may be, the podcasters or whatever. It's a whole different scene now. Is it better? Is it worse? Well, that's for the viewer to decide. All I know is, like you, I feel very lucky to have been part of it, and I'm very lucky to have you on my podcast. I think, and the fact that you'd come on and let me kind of get first dibs on this, I really appreciate it. This is going to be an exciting project, and I think a lot of people are going to want to be part of it.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. I mean, this has been a pleasure, and you're one of the people who I respect in this, you know, the journalistic side of the industry, including, of course, Brian Solomon and others. But for anyone who wants to kind of follow along, you know, I encourage you to follow me at michaelcavaccini.com. So if you're listening to this, that's MICHAELCA, V as in Victor, ACI, N as in Nicholas, I.com. So michaelcavaccini.com. You know, subscribe to my email list there to follow along. Once in a while, I post updates. For example, and I forgot to mention him, I had the wonderful opportunity to interview Vince Russo a few months ago, and that was a delight because he had a huge influence on the creation and success of the Knockouts, and we got to talk, and it was just phenomenal. So, you know, make sure to follow along there because that's where all the information is going to be. And of course, on social media, you'll find me. Usually my handle is like at @mcavaccini, but my website's always the best bet, and you can also email me through there too. So stay in touch. And it's going to be exciting over the next few years. It's all going to come together, and it's going to be fun.
Yes, it is. It's definitely going to be fun. Michael Cavaccini, thanks again, man. It's good to see you. I will probably. Are you coming to the Goodhart thing in a couple of months? Because I'm definitely going to be there in Philadelphia at the 2300.
You know, I got to look into it and see what my schedule's like. So I'm not sure. So I may or may not be, but. Usually, if there's a TNA event, you'll see me. If there's an event at 2300 Arena and I'm available, I usually try to be there. So
that's where it's going to be. You know, so I'm hoping maybe you will have enough time to pop your head in there because it's going to be a lot of fun. It's Joel's last promotion, and it should be kind of cool. Remember, he was the precursor with Tri-State Wrestling to ECW. So I'm looking forward to it. I haven't seen the guy in 40 years, so you know, a little time has passed. So. It's going
to
be great.
I'm sure he'll love to see us. That's going to be great.
Plus, it's another excuse to come to Philadelphia. I love Philly. So anyway, thanks again, Michael. Great news. This is excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
I just need to take a moment on this show to get a little serious about something just for a moment. As I sat down to record this show, it's January 24th. And something very sad has just happened.
I just got news that the former executive producer for ICW and IWCCW, which is, of course, Mario Savoldi's promotion, executive producer Howard Rapp has died. I'm going to read what was written on Facebook about Howard. And I quote, Howard was a, by the way, this is from the Savoldi Wrestling Library. I quote, Howard was a huge part of the success of ICW in the 90s, not only through funding, but having been an agent for many musicians and Borscht Belt comedians. Howard was able to secure great venues such as Kutcher's in Monticello, New York, where many of IWCW and IWCCW's biggest moments took place. Howard was a good man, a sad loss for sure, end quote. I'll tell you how good Howard Rapp was. I showed up working for PWI. They sent me there to cover an event at Kutcher's. I was to do some color commentary, and, you know, there was the Tony Atlas era there, and I was really looking forward to the show. And I was on a diet. This is going to sound like hooey, but I swear this is all true. I was on a diet. I did the Atkins program, and it was the early Atkins program back then, where it was mostly, you know, mostly protein, very little carbs. And I overdid it. And unbeknownst to me, my right kidney was going, hold on here. Watch it. You know, just watch it. You're overdoing it. You're not doing this right. But I didn't know that. I was just very, very strict on it. And I hadn't had a whole lot of carbohydrate for a while. Now, again, I'm not blaming the Atkins program. I'm blaming myself for this. I was burning them ketones and dropping weight like crazy. But I'm driving to Kutcher's. I had this pain, huge pain in my right side, and it just wouldn't subside. I made it there. And I got into my hotel room, and I, you know, there at Kutcher's, and I looked at my face, and it was not red, but blood red. My whole face was red. My eyes were dilated. I was in trouble. So I lay down. And I said, maybe I'll sleep this off. And the more I lay there, the worse pain I got, the worst pain I felt. So I called the reception at Kutcher's, and I said, could you, is there anyone who could take a look at me in the room here? Is there any medical staff on call there? I don't feel good. In fact, I feel like I'm in trouble. I didn't know, but I was. And I waited for, it only took about 10 minutes, and an ambulance showed up, and a stretcher was hauled into my room, and they put me on the stretcher. I was in such pain in the ambulance that the EMTs gave me morphine. And that's how bad it was. My blood pressure was dangerous, and it was kind of a rough situation. And I believe I was in the hospital for 2 days. And as it turned out, they said, you're just overdoing it. You gotta get a little more normal with your, with your nutritional intake. But I was a mess. And I remember calling Stu Sachs at PWI, and I was high on morphine at the time. You probably thought I was goofing, but no, this is all true. So after a couple of days, I'm back at work at PWI, right? I get a phone call out of the blue. It's Howard Rapp. And he goes, I was told that night that you were hauled out on a stretcher. I said, my gosh, that's terrible. You should have let us know you weren't feeling well. I said, I didn't have time to make a decision. I just had to do what I had to do. He said, listen, Bob, whatever you need, you know, if you need anything, call me. We really were sorry you weren't at the event to help us out, and I just want you to get better. And I'm thinking to myself, what a guy Howard is. Just out of the blue to call me like this to check up on me after, you know, my little health scare. I never forgot Howard Rapp for that. I swear to you, I never forgot that. And this feels like it was about a month ago that this still happened. When someone does a kindness for you like that, you never forget it. And I've never heard anybody say a bad word about Howard Rapp, even though, you know, it's the wrestling business is what it is. But you know what? The Savoldis are all class, and Howard Rapp is all class too. And I'm very sorry to hear of his passing. My best to his friends, family, his fans, the wrestlers that knew him, the whole Savoldi family. All I can say was Howard Rapp wasn't a good man. He was a great man. And God bless everybody right now during this troubled time. And thank you, Howard. Well, as Sam Cooke once sang, as I hinted at the beginning of the program, we're going to make some changes here, and they're going to be fun. So you just wait a little bit. We'll get our ducks in a row, and we're going to have some really cool stuff coming your way here on the Outdated Wrestling Hour. Write to us, outdatedwrestling@gmail.com. Our website, outdatedwrestlinghour.buzzsprout.com. All of our shows are there. You can also find our recent shows on WrestleCopia.com, of which we're a member of. Find Bob Smith on Facebook. I'm the only Bob Smith singing with the one and only B.B. King. I hope you heard our entertainment hour with Tony Coleman, his longtime drummer, and a blues superstar in his own right, even today. Facebook is where we do most of our announcements, but you can also find Outdated Bob on Blue Sky and on Instagram and on Threads. That's it for this time. I hope you enjoyed our show, something a little different. And we hope you continue to listen and subscribe when you get an opportunity to. By the way, we do have our Outdated Wrestling Hour fan club if you want to join the tomfoolery here. Nominal fee will help perpetuate the ongoing episodes of not only this show, but our sister bi-weekly show, the Outdated Entertainment Hour. We got a good one coming up there with Joe Puccio. You like rock and roll? This is the show for you. That's going to be that one. So let's rock and roll out of here. My name is Bob Smith, the old PWI guy. We hope you're enjoying the show. And until next time, like I always say, peace and love to everybody. Please, peace and love.